CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Avenelis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. This is the New World Report. There's new trouble for old trouble. Bolivia, a nation that is part of the drift to the left these last elections in South America. You will remember recently Lula da Silva, the president, very powerful president of Brazil, visited La Paz to sit with President Arce. Now we have this news, which usually indicates weakness in the government. Bolivia inflation nears decade high. The explanation from Reuters. This marks the strongest inflation in close to a decade, remains far above the central bank 3.6% target for the year. They're saying now a monthly increase of 1.58%. I add also that the capital, La Paz, is troubled by the fires from forest fires, from smoke. It's as if suddenly shadows have come over La Paz and Bolivia. Arce is not popular, not unpopular, but there is Evo Morales, the longtime strongman president who fled after a corrupt election. However, he hovers over like the angel of bad news. Anything that happens in Bolivia. Professor, how do you read this inflation story and the visit of Lula da Silva and the talk that Arce is out of favor?
It's a great question, John. And I was actually talking with a number of Bolivian friends and colleagues in conjunction with some research that I've been doing on the crisis in the country. And although inflation does not look anything like what we've seen in Argentina or Venezuela, prices are high. It's been a hardship factor. But as you also point out, Bolivia in a number of different ways, economically and politically, is in a real crisis that's getting very little attention from the West, given its centrality in the South American content, and given it's the importance of where Bolivia goes, given where we're seeing other actors, on the left, such as Venezuela and Nicaragua and others going. First of all, you have the dominant movement for socialism party, the MAS, which under Evo Morales dominated Bolivian politics, for about 14 years, something that people once thought could never be done in very difficult to govern. Ethnically complex Bolivia. But after he was kicked out of office because he essentially was caught by the OAS trying to steal an election back in 2019, he briefly went into exile. But then the MAS, under his former economics minister, Luis Arce, considered a moderate, the MAS was reinventing itself, Arce came back into power. And so what you've seen since then is first of all, that the MAS has turned back under Arce to many of its very strong leftist orientations. They've embraced Iran in terms of a drone deal and other things with the Iranians. They've embraced to a certain degree the continuation of problematic military and economic deals on large scale with the PRC and to a lesser extent the Russians and others. And certainly, as we saw with Nicolas Maduro, have taken a very unhelpful orientation, embracing other dictatorships in Latin America. But two things have happened. On the political front, there's been a bitter fight between Evo Morales and Luis Arce for control of the MAS as we approach elections, which will be next summer here in 2025. Morales has held essentially party congresses of his supporters that just recently kicked Luis Arce out of the MAS. Arce has had his own party congresses, ironically the same MAS, in which they kicked Evo Morales out. The Bolivian electoral authorities are trying to figure out who is actually in control of the MAS itself. And meanwhile, if you think that that creates an opportunity for a more conservative opposition to come back into power, you'd think wrong, because you have across the right and in the center a number of really politicians who have been around since the 1990s and before. People by the name of Samuel Dora Medina, Tutu Quiroga, Manfred Reyes Villa, Carlos Mesa, who continue to fight amongst themselves in that right. But while you have this radical policies, while you have a fight over who controls the ruling party, while you have the fragmentation of all of the alternatives, the economy is also very rapidly deteriorating. There was a neglect during the Evo Morales days of reinvesting in the gas production sector, which has really been the cash cow for all of the social programs and other things in the country. Now you are seeing a precipitous decline in gas production, which has caused it to have Bolivia to have to break its commitments to a number of allies in terms of gas exports. But with declining gas, you've had declining gas revenues. That's meant that they've had a shortage of dollars, which is what you get from selling your gas. The shortage of dollars has caused all kinds of economic problems in terms of the ability to import goods. People are frustrated because they can't get the dollars for basic necessities. But the big thing that not having dollars has hurt is that Bolivia actually has to import diesel fuel, and it really can't import less diesel fuel because that's critical for the trucking and other things to keep the economy running. Basically, without dollars, there's been diesel shortages. That's forced transportation strikes and things like that, and really impaired the economy and leading to even more protests. And so you've had these grave economic issues. On top of that, Bolivia is a very centralized country, and that every couple of years they have a census, which will determine the apportionment of votes and the apportionment of essentially economic rewards from the center in La Paz. The census that was delayed, they just had the census results come in, if Bolivia already didn't have enough problems. And in the opposition territory, Santa Cruz, you had mysteriously almost a million fewer votes, a million fewer people that were counted than supposedly other informal calculations said were there. And so the opposition for that issue as well is up in arms, saying essentially that their participation, their the piece of the economic pie they get, the piece of the political representation is being sabotaged because essentially, a million people in Santa Cruz department were not found.
I remember, Professor, Santa Cruz was troubled 2 years ago. Is that always been trouble resisting La Paz?
So traditionally, what they call the lowland states of the half moon, the media luna, which is so Bolivia is divided between the more the highland mountainous, the Altiplano, et cetera, La Paz, et cetera, and then the lowland states, Beni, Santa Cruz, among
which,
others.
Which is the agriculture center, as I recall. It's a dim memory.
It's agricultural production. It's the production actually of gas. It's traditionally been far more prosperous and truly has been the economic producer for much of Bolivia. But going back to 2007, 2008, in which Bolivia almost went into a civil war over again, political differences and the distribution of resources. So for decades historically, that the more conservative, lowlands there, especially Santa Cruz, have been part of that opposition. Indeed, the former mayor of Santa Cruz, it was Luis Camacho, was put in jail as part of the outcomes of events in just a couple of years ago. So you had the issue with the census. You've had other strikes, and so this is really only the latest with the Cruceños, that the Cambas, feeling that politically they are being marginalized by the much more leftist center MAS and in its domination of La Paz and in national politics.
Professor Evan Ellis, we turn to Brazil. There's a mystery here, Evan. I need help. Chinese troops will take part for the first time in Brazil's annual military exercises that also includes U.S. forces, according to the Brazilian Navy. Evan, what? I spend a great deal of my time attending to the Chinese surveillance of U.S. secrets and confidences and security, inviting the Navy to operate alongside the U.S. Navy. Has this happened before?
For Brazil, this is the first time it's happened in such a blatant way. There's a major exercise that you alluded to. It's largely a logistics exercise, Operation Formosa, in which the U.S. Marine Corps participates, about 2,500 people between the U.S. and Brazil and a handful of others, working side by side with the Brazilians. So this year, for the first time ever, to the best of my knowledge, the leftist center returned to government of Lula da Silva, who has been cozying up to the Chinese economically, and indeed, literally just days after he came back into office, invited the head of the propaganda department of the Chinese Navy for a high-level visit, kind of signaling where things would be going. And so this time it's symbolic in this exercise, really, that's been the crux of U.S.-Brazilian cooperation, that symbolically they've invited a small but symbolically important group of Chinese to participate. Now, technically, the Chinese are going to do something with the Brazilians apart from what the U.S. is doing with the Brazilians. And so on our side, we're trying to make this not to be that big of a deal. But it is a part of the creeping presence, which although the economic dimension of Chinese presence and the influence networks that they weave is strategically the more important. With partners who are open to the Chinese for economic reasons, you're beginning to see this creeping engagement that causes discomfort for the U.S. military, for whom its continued access and foreclosing options of its competitors in Latin America is strategically vitally important.
So I'm right to say what? Okay, I didn't mean to underline something that could be understood as the challenge of mill-to-mill relations. I understand that. It struck me as odd, given the passion the Chinese Communist Party has for stealing secrets. One more detail. Argentina, we've not mentioned it for a couple of weeks because the story there is not that negative. The inflation picture is better. It's still bad, but it's better. What is the perception in Washington? Is Javier Milei having a success? Is the jury still out? Has the jury been convened?
Well, John, macroeconomically, Milei has done a pretty darn good job, largely by shutting down the economy and shutting down spending. So, this year, Argentina's GDP is projected to fall 3.8%. You've had, again, a dramatic drop in spending. Their macroeconomic numbers, the IMF is very happy with the progress that they've made. They've extended loans to help them out with ongoing debt service. So if you look at the macro numbers, yeah, inflation went down from, again, a far, far larger level to now. Under 10%. I think August it came in at 3.9% for the month. And so that thing, which has been a crippling factor in Argentina and the devaluation of the peso, balance of payments problem. Milei, macroeconomically, as the former economist that he is, has done an amazing job, and people are very happy with that. The problem is that Argentina has not yet begun to attract reinvestment and produce jobs in significant quantities that get you those other things that you need. Employment, hope. Argentines have taken a big hit with increases in cost of utilities after subsidies were ended. They've taken big hits in terms of the over 50,000 Argentines who were laid off of federal work when half of the ministries were eliminated. They've taken big hits when most of the voluntary subsidies from the Argentine federal government to the provinces were cut off, forcing the provinces to ratchet in their spending. So macroeconomically, Milei is the darling child of economists, especially in Washington, the getting the country back on its feet in terms of the livelihood of people is still a work in progress. And of course, Malay's somewhat unorthodox foreign policy decisions have also continued to turn eyes both, I would say, in Washington, although he's very pro-U.S., and also in other places such as Europe.
One more detail about Nicaragua. There has been new abuse from Managua towards dissent. Dissent has left the country. Is there any movement at all about Nicaragua and Washington, or is it identified as a no-go zone?
Well, sadly, it seems that despite things such as the NECA Act, despite previous legislative frameworks in the U.S. sanctions, Washington has been very distracted right now by elections and other things going on, including, of course, Venezuela, which we talked about. But with the absolute consolidation of power of the Ortegas and the elimination of the opposition, even the church opposition, the Ortegas are doing something now, taking a page from the Cubans, which, as you remember, they got rid of their prisoners and dissidents. You had the issue of the Mariel boat lift in Cuba, and so Nicaragua also has begun basically kicking its dissidents out of the country. You had the first big wave was in February 2023, when about 222, including the Archbishop Rolando Alvarez, were sent to the United States. And so the most recent wave occurred literally just weeks ago, where you had, or I think just a little over a week ago, where you had 135 prisoners who were sent to Guatemala. And we're going to see where they are sent from there.
30 seconds, Professor. Go ahead, 30 seconds.
But is a sad testimony in the brutality with which Ortega is managing these things. After they were kicked out of the country to Guatemala, these dissenters and press personnel and others, they summarily took away their citizenship, as well as taking away the property that they had in Nicaragua as part of their being kicked out of the country. But at least now they're safe in Guatemala and no longer in Nicaraguan jails.
Professor Avenelis, U.S. Army War College, New World Report. We're going to the Amazon. I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.